Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to call the meeting to order. If we could please... The summit, the meeting. If we could please have a former president of the council, Don Schultz, lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. Mr. President.
Thank you, George. Please place your right hand on your heart. Repeat after me.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Beautiful.
Okay, let's start.
When are you going to do public comments?
Huh?
Before or after?
No. Do we have any comments?
Yes, we have eight.
Eight of them?
You want to get through that first?
Yeah, let's do them really fast now.
Okay, so first order of business is going to be called to order. We've done that. Pledge of Allegiance. We're done there. Roll call, Mr. Secretary.
Okay, President Thomas.
Here.
Vice President Benjamin.
Here.
Secretary Hendry here. Treasurer Hopp.
Aye, here.
Ms. Havard. Ms. Meyer.
Here.
Mr. Lazarevitz.
Here.
Mr. Martin. Ms. Skelton.
Here.
Ms. Skelton? Yes, okay. Mr. Kamara. Mr. Maleko.
Here.
Mr. Anand. Mr. De La Cuesta. Ms. Patton. Mr. Lynn. Mr. Luna. Mr. Marabi. And Ms. Arzola.
Perfect. Very good. Moving on. Comments from the chair. I have nothing at this time. We are going to go through public comment first, and then Councilmember Paul Krikorian is going to start our summit. So please, guys, keep it to 2 minutes because we do have a lot on the agenda. Starting off, Joan Pellico.
Thank you. Hello, council members and stakeholders and friends. Councilman Krikorian. I'm Joan Pellico, and I work for Councilman Paul Koretz. I'm chief of staff. Tonight, I am here as Joan Pellico because I am running for City Council District 4, Tom Labonge's seat, when he terms out in 2015. This subject is also very dear to my heart, because I live in the neighborhood. I am a Valley girl. I have lived here for 26 years, and I am very aware of what goes on in our neighborhood. I live six blocks away from Sepulveda. I have been working in the council office for 9 years, and I started as a field deputy, worked myself up the ladder to chief of staff, and I know how the city works. I know how it doesn't work. And more important, I know who gets the work done in the city. So I do look forward to speaking with you. I hope to meet you all personally, listen to your issues. I probably know most of them. And I thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you, Joan. Thank you very much. You. Up next, we have Jesse Torresco, co-director, East Valley. Did I chop your name there? Very good. All right, Jesse.
Please use the mic, sir.
Use the mic, please.
Lankershim and San Fernando Road, you probably are aware of it. I know Councilman Krikorian was over there, and he's aware of that area. This is a big prostitution, human trafficking, and child abuse area. They snatch them off the streets. We've had this problem for 100 years since they opened up Highway 99, which is now known as San Fernando Road. We've been fighting this problem, my partner Cindy Sauer and I, she's been fighting it for over 35 years, her father for over 50 years, second generation business owner. I've lived in the community 53 of my 54 years, and I've seen it change and grow dramatically over this time. There is a model, and there is a model that works, and we've got it working over there, and I'm going to go through it real quick. I will only be 2 minutes or less. Here's the model. Somebody like me has to get involved in the community and door knock and let everybody know in the target areas what's going on four blocks away from their house. Hi, my name is Jesse Torero. I'm here to fight prostitution. I'm here to help you and your family have a better quality of life. Hi, my name is Jesse Torero. Did you know that your alley has nothing but condoms in it? Somebody has to get out and do that. I did that. Cindy did that. 12,000 flyers later, Spanish and English. Now, what that created was the media. You have to create a media event, because if the media doesn't get involved, Nobody knows about it. The police can't police out of this. The legislators can't legislate out of this. The only people that can get out of this is you, me, and the people on the street. Places like Mary Magdalene Church are so effective because they take the women off the street and start their lives over again. Give them a chance to win, not fall into the abuse and abyss of evil satanic behavior. And their kids. This is second and third generation. I've seen it for 50 years of my life. This is what has to happen. Your police agency, the captain, the P3 in your local area, Van Nuys, Mission Hills, Foothill, it doesn't make any difference. He has to make it an agenda. Somebody has to make it an agenda for him. Your local politicians, same thing. They aren't with you. Get out there and fight for the right to take your streets back. You get 150, 200 eyes on the street. I'm telling you, night and day, they're watching. They're watching them, and they report. And that's the key. It's a combination of you and me working hard to make this happen with the politicians, with the legislators, with the police, with everybody, the business owners. It affects their business. They've got to participate. Get that going, and you're going to have a winning combination. It has changed at Lancashire and San Fernando Road dramatically, and it can change up and down Sepulveda one block at a time.
Thank you, Jesse.
Thank you.
Ruth Hull, journalist, going once. All right, Ruth, you are recognized for 2 minutes.
Okay. Hi, my name is Ruth Hull. Actually, I've done, my background is in law and investigation, as well as in journalism. And what has surprised me is that the biggest source of human trafficking in the world right now has come to become the family law courts, particularly those in California. Last Wednesday, it appears we lost the fight to stop the human trafficking of child human sex victim Lexi Dillon, a 9-year-old girl who was sodomized and raped by a foreigner whose only citizenship was in Thailand. Last Wednesday, the judge ordered her sent out of the country, and the apartment where she was living is now vacant. As far as we know, she's gone. She is not the only child in America or even in California who has been ordered sex trafficked out of the country. Another child is Jonah Reef, whose mother fought very hard to try and save her son from being sex trafficked to a man who is not even related to him. He was last seen outside of the country over a year ago. What happens is if a woman or even a man reports that somebody has sexually abused a child, they automatically lose their right to parenting, to custodial rights, because they are an alienator. And that means that they may be at best put on supervised visitations, and the child gets to have sex every night of the week with the person who initially did it, because raping a child is not considered as bad as alienation. This is something that has to stop. There are millions of kids in the United States who are being forced to have sex against their wills because the courts are not respecting the children and not protecting them from human trafficking. It is up to us as citizens, and it is up to the news media. I do not know why the news media sat down on Lexi Dillon and Jonah Reef, why they are not demanding their return. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ruth. Up next, we have Louisa Ashley, DA Victims Services.
Hi, my name is Louisa Ashley. I'm just here to actually to learn more about what's going on in the community and with sex trafficking, because I don't know if a lot of you have heard that the DA's office, Jackie Lacey, has started a new program, a diversion program for minors being arrested, by helping them with services, treating them as victims, not as criminals. And we're here to do that. We help the crime victims. We help them with getting referrals for counseling and pay for the counseling, and hopefully that they can start a new life. Okay? Anyway, my office is right here at Van Nuys Court, 6230 Silmar. We also have a city attorney advocate that works here in this building, and we're here to help. Thank you.
Thank you.
Up next, we have Makinda Sherwin, court watcher.
Hello. To follow up with Ruth Hull's subject of child trafficking within the family law and the dependency courts of this nation, there was a young girl by the name of Justina Pelletier. Her parents and a church organization filed a writ of habeas corpus and got her away from a hospital that kept her captive for 18 months away from her parents, who are safe, fit, and loving. It was an outrage. I've been watching the courts for 20 years now, and at first I thought I was getting it wrong. I must be wrong. It must be an anomaly. But court watch after court watch after court watch, I have seen superior court judges suppress evidence of sexual abuse against children. I have seen witnesses, including experts in child sexual abuse, who are there to support the child and the child's disclosures, left in the hallways of courthouses, unable to testify in defense or in support of a child's disclosures of sexual abuse, because certain minors' counsels, court appointees, have decided that the child is lying. Well, with the Catholic Church and with the Jerry Sanduskys of the world, we have learned as a community. Someone's giving me two extra minutes. Yes.
Okay.
We have, with the Jerry Sanduskys in the Catholic Church, it has been for years and years and years, blame the victim. Always and without fail, blame the victim. So we have this very serious problem within the superior courts of this country. We have victims, domestic violence victims, who are murdered with their children every week in this country. A domestic violence victim walks into a court, wants to extricate themselves from their abuser, and the court forces that victim into shared custody of the children. And they're trapped. There's nothing they can do. If they disclose abuse, they lose custody of their children. It is a problem. Nobody wants to talk about it. We have Dianne Feinstein. She knows about it. Every congressman and senator in this state is aware of this problem, and they ignore it. No one is doing anything. The press turn away from it. What's going on? I don't understand it. And if any of you have the answer, I'd like to hear it, because after 20 years of thinking that perhaps I'm wrong about this, I'm not wrong. Lexi Dillon is a victim of sexual abuse. She has been photographed. The DA has refused to do anything about it to protect her. The Board of Supervisors has refused to do anything. So if you've got any information that you can give us, we cannot sleep at night.
Thank you, Melinda. Now, Bob, were you the one that allocated your time?
Yes.
Okay, so then our last public comment will be from Nathaniel.
That's very close.
How about just Nat?
There's one more public comment.
Yes, call me Nat.
All right, Nat. The floor is yours.
So my name is Natana Cabanas.
Thank you so much. I'm actually from CASA of Los Angeles, CASA Court-Appointed Special Advocates. So I'm a foster youth advocate. And I'm actually speaking today because we see a lot of trafficking issues in the foster care system. 70% of foster care youth, 70% of the trafficked victims are foster care youth because they are the most vulnerable to this issue. So I actually really want to talk to you a little bit, or I'd actually like this summit to address not necessarily the customer approach model of arresting Johns, but the victim approach model of identifying the most vulnerable victims. We're looking at 10 to 12-year-old children who are identified as the children that become trafficked. So I see this daily, and I actually want to give a shout out to Baca. I'm so glad you guys are here. But I see this daily, and I really think that we need to identify who these children are that are becoming trafficked, because that is at least an angle to approach this issue. So I hope we are able to address that today. Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right, Councilmember Krikorian, if you're ready. Ladies and gentlemen, Los Angeles City Councilman Paul Krikorian.
Thank you very much, President Thomas. Thank you all very much for being here. And let me say first, as I do every time I join a neighborhood council meeting, how much I appreciate the board members who are here. Thank you for your service to our city. If some of you, I think many of you come to neighborhood council meetings a lot, but for those of you who don't, know that these folks who are sitting here represent Van Nuys and some of the most difficult, painful issues that we have to grapple with as a city, and they are this community's voice in trying to make sure that our neighborhoods are empowered and have a voice in the city's government. And this neighborhood council, like the other 94 throughout our city, really do give voice to each of our neighborhoods, and it's so important. And I really do appreciate all the sometimes thankless and always very long hours and difficult work that you do on behalf of the people of Van Nuys. So thank you all very much. And I want to thank all of you for being here tonight for this very, very important summit. You know, sometimes it seems like we tend to work on the same issues year after year after year, and it seems like treading water sometimes. And this is one of them, because for as long as I can remember growing up in the Valley, Sepulveda Boulevard in particular, and other parts of Van Nuys as well, has been known for being a problem area for prostitution and other kinds of issues like that. And yet still, year after year, we continue to wrestle with the same challenge. And I continue to hear people say, in fact, I was just reading a news article today about some of the work that our great council member, my colleague Nuri Martinez, is working on this. I was reading some of the comments in response to that. And still you hear people say, in my view, very silly things like, this is just government cracking down on another victimless crime. Why should government get involved in victimless crimes like this? Well, all of you know that if you live or work or own property in an area beset by prostitution and sex trafficking, you are a victim. Certainly, everybody who is impacted by the public health aspects of this is a victim. The people who even go out and seek sex in this way become victims when their own lives and their own families become destroyed. And most important of all, the people who are most often arrested in connection with this crime, unfortunately, are the victims themselves. The young women, the children, very often, who are pulled into this life. And for people to suggest that this is victimless implies that the young women involved somehow make a conscious choice. It's a career choice, It's a decision that they want to go into this field as opposed to some other field. You all know that that's ridiculous. That's ludicrous. Almost always, these are young women who are products of abuse and continue to be abused even while they are being trafficked by pimps and their customers. So this is not a victimless crime. We are all victims of this crime, and we need to address it. Now, as I say, sometimes it seems like year after year we're just saying the same thing over and over, and it continues to happen. That's why this summit is so important, because it's only going to be through continued vigilance at the neighborhood level that, and I mean continuing year after year, that we're going to be able to get a handle on this. And fortunately, we now have a real champion in Nuri Martinez. And I just can't say enough about the work that my colleague has done in this area. You all know that this is something she talked about during her campaign very often. And I'm telling you, from day one, from arriving in the council, she has been focused and disciplined and vocal and assertive about trying to finally put a stop to this problem once and for all. Not just moving it around, not just brushing it under the carpet, but actually putting a stop to it through things like diversion programs that actually get to the root of the problem, both for the women involved and for the Johns, through things like more severe enforcement of the pimps and traffickers who are the real perpetrators, the organized crime element of this, you know, by focusing more resources in prosecuting them, and even by advocating at the state level for more severe penalties for them, by working closely with the Los Angeles Police Department. I'm so pleased that Captain Menzel is here today. And again, this is, I think, a statement of how important this issue is, that our captain is joining us today for this. And Councilmember Martinez has worked so closely with LAPD to ensure greater visibility, greater prevention, and greater enforcement in these areas. So I just think that we couldn't have a better champion than Nuri Martinez in trying to address this issue. That being, and in just a moment, I'm going to ask her area director to come on up and speak a little bit as well. But I want to just also leave you with this. This is not an issue that can be addressed just by law enforcement. It's not an issue that can be addressed just by policymakers, because what happens is it just moves. You know, the problem will move on to someplace where the heat is off. And so one neighborhood solves its problem, and another neighborhood becomes the recipient of that problem. And so that's where sustained effort at the neighborhood level is important. You are the eyes and ears that will be the long-term remedy to this problem. You and your relationship with your neighborhood council, with the Los Angeles Police Department, with your council office, you are the key to a long-term solution to this. And I can tell you that I'm certainly going to be very supportive of every request that Councilmember Martinez makes for more resources to be able to address this problem. As chair of the Budget and Finance Committee, I have some role in that, and I'm very supportive of her efforts. But also, I chair the San Fernando Valley Council of Governments. And so it's important that we take the efforts that we're making here in Van Nuys and we broaden it to the entire San Fernando Valley. And if we do that, and if we continue to be vigilant, and if we continue to succeed in this kind of bringing together of all of the stakeholders and all of the law enforcement and political and community and visibility resources that we have available to us, then perhaps once and for all, we won't be doing this year after year, but we will once and for all finally be able to say that the San Fernando Valley is an area free of sex trafficking, and that will be a happy day indeed for all of us. So with that, I just want to thank you again. Thank you for having me. Thank you all for attending and for participating. And I do want to ask Linda Levitin to come up, who's the area director for Councilmember Martinez, who is going to provide you with more detail about steps that are being taken and also how you can continue to be part of that effort. So, Linda, on behalf of all of the people of Van Nuys, let me just thank you and Councilmember Martinez for all that you're doing to make this a better community. Thank you very much.
I'm sorry that my boss couldn't make it tonight. Unfortunately, she had an emergency, and believe me, she wanted to be here. The first thing that I want to do is thank her colleague, Councilmember Kerkorian, because she needs that support, and over a period of the last year has gained more and more support from people such as yourself, so thank you so, so much on her behalf. You know, she came into the city council wanting to work on quality of life issues. And the first thing she realized is that there was a major quality of life issue. We have two of the biggest tracts for prostitution in our district. She met with community members in an organization called GASP. She's been meeting with Mary Magdalene Project. She's worked, as well as I have, with people like Kim Roth from United Strength and also CATS, which is the Center for Assault Treatment Services. It's extremely important that you do realize that what the councilman was saying is that these kids are victims. The average age of the prostitutes on the street is 14. Average age, 14. Okay? Any child can be a victim. Your child, my child, could go into a mall, and if someone sees them, or even at their school, and realizes that they're shy, or no one wants to engage them, there are all kinds of trappings that are set. It could be some girl who makes friends with them. It could be some boy that makes friends with them, and goes under the guise of wanting to date them, and maybe they haven't been popular. Maybe they haven't gotten the attention that they feel they need. And because this person's giving them the intention and giving them gifts and giving them things, and then the next thing you know, these girls are kidnapped and beaten into submission to go out onto the street. It's not a choice that they make at all. And they are victims. They are victims. And they can be from anyone's families. We can stereotype however we want, but they can be from anyone's families. The councilwoman has realized this. Even though people say she can't really do much, you don't tell her that. This is not how she looks at things. She wants to make a difference no matter how long it takes. And so she's been working with LAPD and Van Nuys Division as well as in Sun Valley, and she's been working with she's gone on task forces with LAPD. I got to tell you something. I've lived a longer life than her, and I admire her. I'm not sure I could see those girls being arrested. It's really sad because they're so victimized that they can't. They're scared. They're scared to testify against their pimps. It is organized crime. They're organized gangs that run a lot of these rings. They're sent in, and they're on a track. And they're sent in from all over the place. They move them in for a couple of days or a week, and then they move them somewhere else. Okay? So they're afraid. When we get the girls, they don't want. They've been told that they'll be killed or their family will be killed. And they're young kids. They believe that's going to happen. So it's very, very, very difficult. The diversion programs, yes, the council member has worked with the DA's office. And they've been working on what they call John classes for some of the people, some of the Johns that have been arrested. And so that's another avenue. And it does make a difference. You still will get Johns, but a lot of times it really reduces the chance of them going back out there once they are educated and realize it's child abuse. It's simply child abuse, what they're doing. Okay? My boss has secured funding for ped cars, for San Fernando Road, and for Van Nuys or Sepulveda Boulevard. She's hoping that she can make this a permanent thing. She's working towards that, Okay? Her whole goal is that she wants to make a profound difference. She's not going to stop trying. You know, I'm a child of the 60s, and I know how idealistic we are. She's an idealist. She truly believes that she can make it better, and she's going to do everything she can to make sure that that happens, and will continue to do so. If any of you feel you want to contact us or you have something that you feel that you contribute to what we can do, you need to let us know. I have cards. You can contact me. I can get you in contact with the people at City Hall that are working on her with this. We literally are working on timelines. We're meeting with a lot of people. We have an amazing person working with her in the DA's office, trying to make a difference. We didn't get this problem overnight, and it's not going to be able to be resolved, but it will get better. We will continue to try to make it better. Thank you for allowing me to speak on her behalf.
Thank you very much, Linda. We are going to reserve time for Assemblymember Dreen Nazarian. He's not here right this second, but we will get him into the agenda when he comes in the room. So we are going to jump right on into this and start with the presentation by Strength United. So without further ado.
Is there a time period for any public members?
No. No, there's no public.
It's a special meeting. It's not. It's not a regular.
It's not a regular meeting. It's special. It's a summit.
And with that, we will turn it over to Strength United.
Good evening. My name is Kim Roth. I'm the executive director for Strength United, formerly the Valley Trauma Center. We're a chartered center of the Michael D. Eisner College of Education, Cal State Northridge, and we bring a unique interdisciplinary approach to all of the work that we do, bringing researchers, faculty, educators, mental health, social health, law enforcement, and prosecutorial perspective to everything that we do. I want to thank the council for inviting me here tonight. I want to thank everyone for coming. I want to thank our law enforcement friends who are doing an amazing job, our governmental and legislative representatives here today who are doing a wonderful job highlighting this issue and helping us think of ways to resolve it. I want to just give you a perspective, a national, international perspective, if you will, and then talk a little bit about what we're doing. So I need my reading glasses for that. Human trafficking is a $32 billion global industry involving over 100,000 children in the United States. After drug trafficking and counterfeiting, it is the world's most profitable criminal activity. It is estimated that an exploiter may earn as much as $650,000 a year by exploiting as few as 4 children. The commercial sexual exploitation of children is defined as the sexual abuse of a minor entirely or at least partially for economic gain. A child victim, thank God, does not have to prove that they were trafficked or violently forced into exploitation in order to be considered a victim. In the past 2 years, California's 9 human trafficking task forces identified 1,277 victims, 72% who were from the United States. Between 2000 and 2010, the Juvenile Division of the Los Angeles Attorney's Office filed 2,180 petitions against minors for violations. And thank God now we're seeing them as victims and not criminals in that regard. The average entry, as you've heard, for child sexual exploitation is about 10, although we are aware of many children who are much younger than 10. Pimps target the most vulnerable in our community, such as runaways and homeless youth who have experienced trouble at home, or children who've been sexually or physically abused or neglected. But I don't want to overlook the fact that if you're unloved, in need of attention, you're vulnerable. Because as a human being, we all need love and attention. And so if you're absent that as a child, a person that wants to exploit you is going to exploit that need that you have, right? It's a seduction. Ultimately, any child, my child, your child, is a potential for sexual human trafficking. Three of the nation's highest intensity child prostitution areas, as identified by the FBI, are located in California, and we're one of those three. Forms of sexual exploitation of children include the sex trafficking of a child, pornography, sex tourism. Other forms include the sexual abuse, including enticement of children for sexual acts, statutory rape. And when we think about these children, we can't think about them as one-time victims, although some may be. Generally, we would classify them as having a polyvictimization, which means they've had a lifetime of victimization starting fairly young, oftentimes occurring in the home. And when they come under the influence of a person that wants to exploit them, they receive more than one violation. As an example, the sexual exploiter might use the internet to lure a person, and I can't stress enough for all of you that are parents, you must know what your children are doing on the internet. It's for our organization that responds 24/7, we are seeing an increasing number of individuals who are lured through the internet with promises of friendship and identifying the child through their interests, because as you know, on places like Facebook, we talk about the things that we like to do. And that's perfect for someone that wants to exploit children, because they can represent themselves as someone who likes to do those things as well and do them with you. So you're exploited on the internet. Maybe you take some photographs of yourself and you transmit them through the internet. So now we have two forms of victimization, and now you meet up with this person who makes false promises, potentially doesn't disclose their age, and now you're lured into something based on the fact that you think this person cares about you, but they actually care about exploiting you. The risk factors, we've talked about a lot of them, but clearly children who are homeless and runaway are at high risk for sexual exploitation. Clearly individuals who come from an abusive background, we've heard about foster care. Many of you may be aware of some studies that have been done in LA County about the number of children who have come to the attention of the Department of Children and Family Services are either currently in their care or were in their care. And I think we're looking at way over 60% of those children having some sexual abuse history. We're looking at group homes as being prime places for recruitment. Girls in group homes are there because they have been involved with this type of terrible, terrible abuse, and they are recruiting other girls out of the group homes that they're supposed to keep them safe. So it's pervasive. We now have people waiting outside high schools, hanging around near our high schools, near our middle schools. And these people are incredibly good at picking out who is vulnerable. They see the child walking home alone. They see the child who doesn't have friends. And that's the child they're going to zero in on, because they intuitively know this child needs that friendship, and that's what they're going to offer them. We also know that this particular crime, I mean, I've worked a lot with domestic violence. I've worked a lot with rape. I would have to say I've never seen such a violent crime in my life. The violence, the threat of violence that these young children go through to keep them under the control of a perpetrator is horrific. We're now even seeing where the girls are being tattooed in very visible places, so a mark of ownership. The other challenge with this population is, so let's say we identify this population. Let's say law enforcement does a really fantastic job. This child can't go home for a multitude of reasons. Maybe home isn't safe, home isn't available, maybe they're refusing to go home. That's where they've experienced a lot of past abuse. Where are we putting this child? Where is this child going that they can be safe? Where will they be safe? So one of the issues we need to be thinking of as a community is when we do identify these children, how do we expand programs like the Mary Magdalene Project, who does have care? How do we get more of that for our kids? Because if you're offered group home as a choice, I think you might go back on the street sometimes. You know, it's what you know. So we need to solve that problem. We also need to look at the traumatic bonding. It's often very hard for these children to break free of the perpetrator. You know, when you have sort of a system of punishment and reward, that creates sort of a significant traumatic bond where you're always trying to please this person. And when you realize that your life, and I literally mean your life, not your next meal, but your life, is dependent upon this person, and you come to the attention of law enforcement who wants to help you get away from this, where are you going and how are you getting away from that person? And how are we keeping you safe from that person? So the fear is very real for these girls and boys. I don't want to omit boys in this. It's very real. So how are we creating systems of care that are partnering with our law enforcement and improving our partnership with law enforcement so that then when they come in contact with minors, we have real and meaningful resources that are going to help these individuals imagine the possibility of being free of this relationship. They have to be real and tangible. So what can we do about that? I'll get questions and answers at the end, okay? Oh, good. Okay, well, I'd love to hear it. The stigma and shame, right? Once we feel we've been cast in this role, we oftentimes can't see ourselves any other way. When we look at the people that we're serving, for our organization, overwhelmingly, we're going to see early childhood sexual abuse. We're going to see polyvictimization, physical abuse, emotional abuse. When you have an experience of early childhood sexual abuse, it works to form your character, who you are. So if you did really well as a child and you were told you were doing really well as a child, as an adult, you believe you can do really well. If you felt as a child you were to be used as a sexual object, you start to believe that as an adult unless you're given other options. So intervening very early in a child's life, and thank God in our world we have those kinds of services now, is also critically important. Children are vulnerable because there's inadequate supervision of care. So most parents are holding down more than one job. Most homes tend to be single family homes. Lots of homes are in chaos, right? Lots of homes are in chaos. So the child is going to seek getting those needs met someplace else. And that's a perfect forum for somebody to exploit. Community violence also contributes to this. If you're raised in family and community violence, you have a sense of that is what your life is like. And exploitation can somewhat become the norm for you versus the abnormal, because that's what you're seeing around you. And again, I can't stress enough the level of manipulation, coercion, threats of violence and actual violence. And again, the need to create a safe home for these children to go to is paramount. Techniques used by exploiters of young children, I've talked a little bit about that. It's really a recruitment technique, and it's really, you know, you're the best thing. You're beautiful. You're lovely. How come you're walking home from school alone? Why would you be alone? You're so unique and special, and I want to take you out for a Coca-Cola. I want to take you for a movie. So they create almost a dating relationship, and then it's, gee, I really wanted to take you out for dinner tonight, but I don't have any money to do that. And I got a couple of friends, and if you love me as I love you, you could help me here, you know, and then we can go out for dinner. Do you want to lose your only lifeline to what you think is love and affection? None of us want to do that. And we have to look at this through the lens of a child and not the lens of an adult. And we have to shift away from looking at issues that impact children through the lens of an adult. We have to look at them through the lens of a child and their developmental capacity to process what's happening for them. And so you think to yourself, I can do this. This is just one time. And you do it, and then you are shamed and blamed and victimized by this person, and you're threatened, and now you've got yourself trapped in the pattern of coercion. Sometimes it's really not a seductive process. It's just plain violence that recruits you into this. But generally, it's looking at something that's missing in the child and exploiting that need. Isolation is another. So once you're in the control of this person, they want to isolate you from anyone that you care about. So you can't get support. So now the only person you are dependent upon is this abuser. And you're dependent upon them for food. You're dependent upon them for Tampax. You're dependent upon them for deodorant. And they will withhold all of those things if you are not successful in meeting their economic need of you. And we know of girls that have gone without food, have gone without basic human right, you know, you're at what you need every day. Coercion, we've talked about, and violence, we've talked about. So I don't want to take up all of your time talking about what's not working, because just by virtue of being here today and having our summit and having all of our legislators here and our law enforcement and seeing how hard everyone is working, we have something working. It's never too late for someone to get help. That's sort of a mantra at our organization. It is never, ever too late. Children who have been exploited, who have had a history of victimization, can thrive and strive and have productive, healthy lives. And we must not pathologize them. We must not look at them and say they're damaged and, you know, this is what their life is going to look like, because they'll feel that from you and then they'll believe that they don't have the possibility to overcome this. Thanks.
That's
so
15
much.
Minutes. Okay. Do you want to do 5 minutes of Q&A?
I just want to do one thing. Want to say one thing. I have a handout for you, and it has resources on it. And I just want to briefly say what we're doing about this is we are attempting to bring everyone together under one roof so that when someone is victimized, they don't have to go from door to door to get services. So if you'd like to learn more about our Family Justice Center, the only one of its kind in Los Angeles County right now, in partnership with our lovely Captain Minsel there, with the help of Nuri Martinez and Tony Cardenas' office, please see Anne. Raise your hand, Anne, and she'd love to introduce you to it and take you on a tour. So thank you for allowing me to speak. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Right, it takes a community, and there's a community in this room right now, and that's what it takes. Thank you.
Does anybody have any questions for Kim? Kim, I have a question. How often does it start as dating and then gets turned into
where they... I think that's the more frequent.
That is the more modus frequent. Operandi?
Yeah, more frequent, definitely.
Yes, Penelope.
I'm going to talk to the money person. Okay.
We gave money
yes.
to Mary Magdalene.
Yes. Oh, Mary Magdalene,
yes.
you gave.
Yes.
No.
Mary Magdalene.
Now, can we give to the
Previously, yeah. Well, I thank you very, very much for doing that. Thank you so much, and now you know where it went as well. So it's working towards this issue, so we're very appreciative.
At what point does the Stockholm Syndrome come into play on this thing? Because obviously at some point the victim becomes capitulated.
Yeah. So it is a process, but it really starts to play out when the violence begins. Because one of the things you're now wanting to do is you're wanting to accommodate the violence and please the person so the violence ceases. So that's really when you start to bond with this individual, align yourself with this individual. It's really a mechanism of survival. I'm going to get through this by bonding with this individual and seeing the world through their eyes, because that's what's going to keep me safe. It's too dangerous for me to do it another
way. So does it take a psychologist to deprogram?
I think you have, yeah. I mean, you have to come into therapy, and we have to have you look at this relationship from a different perspective, and we have to have you. For so many people that we serve, they've not experienced a healthy relationship in their life. So this is oftentimes an extension of other relationships they've had, and they think this is what life looks like. So we've got to help them see that life can be something else as well, and that they deserve something else as well. Thank you very much.
Let's take a couple questions. Yes.
Bill Margolis was here to be here to run successful one for 6 years. So 1,300 men between ages of 18 and 40 have come through that program. Speak at that program from time to time. And one of the things that I learned was they had ex-prostitutes come and speak at that program.
Right.
The last lady spoke to some of the issues that you just talked about.
Thank you.
And in real life.
Yeah.
Older, not 14 years old. Is there any difference in the period it takes for a young person to be turned out or a young adult to be turned out? Is there any time difference? Is there any possibility of the young people trying to get away, to mid teenagers and people, older young people to try to get away? Is there anything like that? And second question would be, where can we have youth programs that can help?
Right. I'm going to actually give your question to Mary Magdalene, because they're really seeing an older population than we are, and we're not really seeing people that had the capacity to opt out. We're seeing people that have been discovered by law enforcement. I think that people, young children, definitely do want to get out. It's just simply too dangerous for them. And so I think Stephanie can speak to what the adult women are doing about that. In terms of youth population, you know, we're doing a lot of youth leadership programs. We do need to really, really work with our youth, especially our most vulnerable youth, and find a replacement for them that a pimp can't fill that void, definitely. I've heard that too. Actually, unbeknownst to us, our office was once located in the heart of pornography. I don't know the statistics on the degree of pornography in the San Fernando Valley, but we have to stop, in general, right, the exploitation of women, because I think what we're saying is when we look at things like pornography, we're creating a permissive culture, right? And so we need to look at that. But that butts up against your constitution and some of the rights that you have. But I really can't speak to the scope of pornography in the San Fernando Valley.
All right, Miriam. Yeah. Thank you, Miriam.
Please.
Yeah. Well, we know of cases of children as young as 8. At our organization, we see children who have been sexually abused, not necessarily through human trafficking, and we're talking from 0 up. So, what we have seen, I've been doing this work for 16 years, and in terms of sexual offending of against children, we've seen the age range drop. So when I was first doing this work, we were seeing, 9, 10, 12-year-olds. We're seeing much younger children now, 6, 7, 5, 6, 7. So we're definitely seeing a drop in age of offender preference.
All right, we're going to do 2 more questions, okay. Ruth and Christopher. So Ruth and then Chris.
Ruth. Thank you for asking that question. Under the leadership of Director Browning at DCFS, we have certainly seen an increase in detention. Our organization has quite large family preservation programs that are aimed at keeping abused children in safe and stable homes and reducing the risk of further abuse, because we know that one of the most traumatic experiences is the removal of a child from their home. And when we look at incarcerated people, we certainly see a significant number of those who have spent time in foster care. I'm a member of a newly formed coalition called the Los Angeles County Child Welfare Coalition. I'll be going to the first meeting tomorrow. And we are looking at this issue of increased detention and a shift away from supporting children in safe homes in their communities to detention. I want to clarify, I don't think group homes are bad. I think they're necessary. Sometimes there is just no option, and I've seen many people come through group homes and achieve amazing things. But they are a place where you can most definitely see recruitment for children to be sexually exploited.
Chris.
Does someone in law enforcement have a sense of what the median age of the pimps are, or do they run the gamut?
They pretty much run the gamut. The average age, as far as the FBI has seen, is about 26, 27. But they've been as old as in their 50s.
Well, thank you so much
thank
for
you,
giving me this opportunity.
Thank you very much,
so
Kim.
Much. Thank you.
All right, up next we have Christine Sessa. Did I pronounce the last name right? Christine, where did you go? Okay. And channel 11 is gone, so you can do the full presentation. Christine, the floor is yours.
Great. Thank you. Okay. My name is Christine. Today has been declared by the UN the first ever World Day Against the Trafficking in Persons. And we are here together standing, thinking, and speaking out, and hopefully working to make a change against sexual exploitation and trafficking in our communities. I am one voice here to break the silence tonight on domestic minor sex trafficking. I'm here to let you know that it happens in our communities to girls that you see daily, that are walking through the park, in your neighbors, that are someone's daughter, that are next door to you, in riding through the metro. According to the law, it states that the trafficking of minors is the recruitment, harboring, transportation, provision, obtaining of a person for the purpose of a sexual act. That's the trafficking of persons 2000. So the three keys of this are force, fraud, and coercion. But the thing is, if someone is under 18, those things are not necessary. Children can be commercially sexually exploited through pornography, prostitution, or erotic entertainment. The law recognizes that a child's threat of harm and psychological manipulation. According to studies by Estes and Weiner, at least 100,000 to 300,000 children are at risk within the United States each year. Of this number, 98% females are female. 83% are U.S.-born citizens. 1 in 7 receive online solicitation, and additionally, 30% are trafficked by a family member, according to Smith, Healy, Vardaman, and Snow. Those are, I have citations for all of those if you are interested. So this is part of my own personal story. I am part of that 30%, and out of respect for my own personal safety, we the news has left, but if you have some kind of recording device, I would ask that you would shut it off at this time because it is going to be kind of graphic. I was not chosen by a pimp or an older boyfriend, as you have heard the narrative, but I was chosen from birth by my father to be abused, exploited, and prostituted for sex acts. I would never know. I was born into a family, an average-looking family in Ohio. I would never know a parent who would love, protect, or care for me. I was never really anyone's daughter. From the beginning of my life, I was seen by my father as a sex object. From early on in my life, like you heard from birth, I was sexually abused, and this would quickly escalate into acts of sexual violence. I was first raped at age 2. I was groomed to be the girl child that my father could use on the black market of sexual exploitation. From early on in my life, I would know sexual abuse, fear, emotional manipulation. And I was quickly learning that my value was not about who I was, but how I was pleasing others sexually. We learned survival skills, and the only life I would ever know was a life of sexual exploitation. I never knew, I never had a friend, played with toys, I never had a birthday party, or celebration of any kind, because prostituted children don't get those things. You simply survive. I did not attend school. I did attend school, but I did not have any friends, and I was quite the outsider. I just survived. I was told that I had a learning disability, because when I should have been learning to read and write, I was being raped and physically assaulted. I didn't know how to play. I only knew how to survive. One of the first incidences of sexual exploitation came when I was being brought to a festival at a church. There was music and food and lots of people there. It was a special day in the Catholic Church. And as a young girl, I wasn't aware about what was going to happen. And I was told to wait in this child's room. So I waited there in this room, and my father shut the door behind him and locked it, and I stood there frozen as a little girl of about 4. I had only learned that you can only say yes. A no is simply not possible. If you say no, horrible things can happen. What resulted was the first time that I would be sold to men. The door was open, and men began to come in with a ticket they had purchased. They were let in, and then once they left, another man would come in with their ticket. The grooming of sexual exploitation in the home continued. Every day, especially on holidays, I would be used in the home for sexual means and groomed for further exploitation. Most days included some type of exploitation. My grandfather and father and others were involved, and others knew about it but simply looked away. As a girl, you learn that you do whatever you're told because saying no could mean death. When it was the holidays, particularly Christmas, I was brought to a party. I was just nicely, and I thought something good would happen because children simply think that something good will happen, even if their whole life has been bad. There was music, and I could hear laughter, sounds coming from the other room. My father said that we were going to have fun tonight. However, my idea of fun and his idea of fun were not the same thing. I had never had a present or ever good intended for me as a girl child. My father had brought me to this Christmas party and brought me into a room, but not the room where the laughter and the fun was happening, but into a side room. As a five-year-old, I was told to stand there and wait, and he made sure I looked nice. I was really scared at the time, and I didn't know what was going to happen. My father left the room and came back, but when he came back, he brought men with him, men dressed in Santa costumes, outfits who looked like Santas, I should say. And there were seats there waiting for them, and they all sat down. And at that time, everything went from bad to horrible. At that time, I was brought forward, and he began to undress me so they could inspect the special treat that they had been told about for the night. The men sat there, and they began to bid on the product, me. So as I stood there, I went off to the highest bidder, and I was brought back to the middle. And as the highest bidder, I was brought over to him, and he brought me over to the corner of the room where there was a mattress, and he raped me for the price. And that went on through the night until the last man was able to pay for me. One FBI agent stated, if money can be made, sex can be sold. Sex trafficking and exploitation can happen anywhere, however, the most unlikely of places. When my father was not bringing me out to exploit me, he'd been continuing to groom me for further sexualized acts. I experienced not only sexual violence and exploitation, but also physical, emotional, and other forms of abuse. As you've heard before, food was withheld at times. I would also be restrained to small locations until I would agree to participate in whatever the sex act. I was physically restrained at times with duct tape over my mouth and held, and I experienced violence as part of the grooming process. I knew that he did not care about my life and would easily take it. And many times he also killed me. He would hold pillows over my mouth to get me to comply. I experienced choking, beating, other forms of violence, including knives and being burned. It is easy for someone much larger to take control of a young girl to submit. I was told that I was a slut, a whore, a prostitute, stupid, and deserved what happened. He told me that that was what I was created to do, to serve him sexually, that I was his slave, and that I was worth nothing apart from that. As a girl, that if that's all you've ever been told, you don't know any differently. I was a domestic captive. Judith Herman refers to this. She is an expert on trauma. And there's invisible bars keeping you there. There's no physical bars as in a brothel, but you don't have a choice. Domestic captivity makes you scream silently because you have learned you cannot scream because it's too painful. And screaming or crying gets you beaten. Your wailings and tears are muted. There are no words to express your pain. And I believe in the midst of this, God hears even our silent cries. My father went on to take pictures of me, pornography that was used to advertise me as his product. He gave me a gift that was lingerie that he used to put me out there. And around age 7, he brought me for the first time to a motel room. He locked the door and I waited. And then men started to line up outside, and they had tickets that on the back was my picture. And men throughout the night came in, and I had to service them with whatever sex acts they asked for. And this would happen on a regular basis. I would not be able to leave until the morning. And throughout my childhood, I would be brought to various places and prostituted at force. My father continued to groom me, and very soon after this, I was brought to a place that I didn't understand. It was loud, and there were lots of people, and it was dark. and I was told I would be dancing. This was a strip club. He told me that I would do a good job or else. I was terrified what would happen to me there. It felt dirty and scary, and I couldn't hear anything. My father dressed me in the lingerie and said he would be there watching in the background, and he pushed me out. And there was a huge poster of me on the wall waiting, and he pushed me in a direction where there were some men waiting for me. And the men expected lap dances, stripping, and other various sex acts. And if I did not please them or bring in enough money, I would be beaten. So every night that we went there, I had sexual contact with many different men, stripping, dancing, performing various sex acts that they asked for. Nothing would be off limits.